If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Rudy! A Star Trek podcast, my two men who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. Oh, that was a terrible idea.
Oh, God.
I'm one of your hosts, Ben Harrison.
Oh, that is so gross. What have you done?
I just nearly killed myself.
You're like Kirk Gibson. You're too injured to play. We wheeled you out there to get one last at bat on the Cosby, and you gave it all you could.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I think you're just gonna have to carry this episode, Adam.
I'm your other host, Adam Pranica, and I'm really glad that whatever you've got is not communicable through microphone wires
via Skype. I definitely had something, if not influenza, something influenza adjacent, as they say in the real estate business. It was no fucking fun.
In this new world of like blogging and being cool on the internet, you want to be an influencer, right? Like that's not funny.
Well, it was almost funny. It was funny adjacent. Adam, I think that the time has finally come to announce a winner in our big contest.
We put you, out, of course, are talking about the contest to give away tour exclusive merch to one of our 1,000 club review people, right?
Yes. We wanted to cheapen the live experience for the people that actually came out and saw us live by de-exclusivizing the t-shirt and poster that we that we sold at the merch booth there, but only for one lucky viewer. And we asked people to help us get up over 1,000 iTunes reviews, and they really came through in a big way. And 2016 was a big year for us, and I think that was in no small part due to the enthusiasm and generosity of our viewers.
It was mostly because of them. I think we became quickly obligated to them instead of to us, even.
Yeah, I think that's true. Well, anyways, we got a slew of entries. I think there were probably more people that left a review to help us get over the line than actually submitted an entry. So thanks to everybody who left one, and thanks to everybody who submitted for the contest. I used a random number generator on the internet to select our winner, and our winner is Crystal J. She wrote a review that was entitled Colon Meanie, which is already great, and she signed it as Keiko O'Brien, which is also a lot of fun. Ben and co-host Adam's dulcet tones mixed with the bridge beeps and boops helped me chill out while I was in the hospital for a while. Perfect combo, Max. of comedy and Trek. Loving the This Old House impression, guys. I think that's what you're doing anyways. Much love from the Shimoda corner of my warp drive harp. Keep it up. It just feels amazing to go look at our iTunes page and see how many people have been touched by this show. So, Crystal, please write in, tell us where we can send your t-shirt and poster, and let us know what size you want. And we'll get those dispatched as quickly as we can.
Lucky Crystal has won our tour exclusive t-shirt, which is Engineer Yellow, and a poster, which is unfit to be hung in public. So congratulations, Crystal.
I saw somebody with that poster framed.
I still can't believe that.
Yeah. So, it's remarkable.
I suppose if you're hard up, you can sell the frame at some point.
Well, shall we get into the episode, Adam?
Yeah, let's do it, Ben. You've been sick for quite a while, so this is one of those pods where we will be recording our show a little bit after we've seen the episode. So we'll see how it goes. It's season 4, episode 26, Redemption, part 1. And Ben, do you remember, it's the end of season 4, when you were watching this for the first time.
Yeah.
This is the season after The Best of Both Worlds. Were you expecting a cliffhanger, like, for the end of this season and henceforth?
I think that I was not sophisticated enough at the time to expect anything. But I think that anybody that sees the episode title pop up on screen,
yeah,
and sees the part one is gonna be excited by that.
Yeah,
if you're watching in that way.
Unfortunately, like the excitement that they ramp up for you is like Picard's mission to put a jacket on a guy. Like, yeah, that's the mission.
Yeah. So, Picard, who earlier in the season served as arbiter of succession for the Klingon Empire, and also turned a blind eye when Worf cold-blooded murdered one of the two guys that was vying for the top job in the Klingon Empire, is heading to Kronos to install Gowron it's not the Emperor, right?
Contextually, he seems to be on his way to becoming the emperor, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's sort of how we would understand it in our culture, I guess.
I guess so. Or, like, president for life or something. But he's going to have Kimpek's role, the role that Kimpek used to have.
He's going to become Klingon Noriega.
Yeah, he's going to be the goat. And so, they're gonna go like do this ceremony, and it seems like it's kind of just a rote thing. Like all of the paperwork has been done, and they just have to do this little ceremony, and then it's official. It's sort of like they've signed the ketubah, but they haven't had the like step on the glass part of the wedding. You know.
Yeah, I get that.
The husband hasn't walked around the bride 7 times. All that stuff. So they're headed out there.
My favorite John Philip Sousa instrument is the ketubah.
Oh boy. Well,
this is why we need you at 100%, Ben. I can't carry the show. And I've shown that time and time again.
The opening scene of this is kind of weird. It's like Worf is hanging out in his quarters, and Picard comes in and he's like, "Hey, you remember how you got your honor stripped from you?"
To be honest, Chris, I'd kind of like to forget all that.
That was awesome.
Worf was like, "Remind me." And Picard's like, "Yeah, like you've been stripped of honor in the eyes of the Empire, and I think this is your big opportunity to get it back." And Worf is like, "Are you sure, Cap? Are you sure that this is the opportunity?" Captain's like, "I'm pretty sure this is it." Which I was really surprised by, because it's like all Worf thinks about is his fucking honor. And In this scene, Picard seems way more interested in it and seems to have more urgency around, like, turning the honor ship around.
The whole tension of it really feels like when you run into your ex-girlfriend at a social event. like you think it's not going to happen until you go out to a thing and she's there. Like, Worf, in an odd way, has not thought about this.
Right.
Even though he's about to go to this massive Klingon social event, Picard's like, this is going to be a great opportunity for you to put things back together, to get back on cool terms with those Klingons that you broke up with.
Well, maybe Picard is just like sick and fucking tired of having to tell every Klingon official that comes on board that they're going to have to deal with Worf as a Starfleet officer, you know? Because he had that ambassador, and the ambassador was like, oh, it's very awkward for me to be around Worf. And Picard had to you know, like, that's got to get old for Picard.
Yeah. And it's pretty clear that everyone else working security on that ship is just not great at that job. and that starts from the top, really.
Yeah. Well,
do you think Worf's quarters is a good place to practice Batleth?
No, it's...
Because he's winging that thing around. The quarters are pretty tight. Like, he has to have knocked stuff off of countertops before,
yeah.
Right?
The only explanation for this is that Riker was using the holodeck before Worf got there. And he, you know, he showed up and the doors opened up and he was just like, never mind. I'll just do it in my quarters.
The triumphant return of Worf puffs occurs in this scene, too.
Oh, yeah. Love those puffs. So the Enterprise is getting into Klingon territory, and a attack cruiser comes out and meets them. And who should be aboard but Gowron? And Gowron is like,
"We will have to move quickly if we are to be successful."
Successful?
Yes. In preventing a Klingon civil war.
Always the threat is the Klingon civil war that the Romulans are going to be involved in somehow. It's been the kind of reflexive go-to threat all season. So finally, they're going to show us the shark, right? Like, if this season is Jaws, we're finally going to see the shark pop out of the water in this episode.
The shark happens to be the form of Klingon Jake.
So Gowron comes aboard and tells him what's popping. And when Worf takes Gowron down to beam him back off the ship, he's like, hey, let me kick something to you. And Gowron is like, I don't want to hear it. I know about you. And so Worf has to like send the transporter operator out of the room and explain that his discommendation was a lie of convenience to protect the Empire from Duras, and like, you know, Worf and Gowron have the same enemy, so that's like definitely interesting.
Worf kicks the transporter guy out so they can have a private conversation, and like, Gowron is super brave. like I think we all understand that you can't rise to the level he's at without having a certain amount of bravery. But man, I think if you're him and you're ready to transport away, I don't think I like Worf at the controls of that thing.
Yeah, it could just beam you into space. You would have no no defense, like, against that.
There's a greater amount of leverage in this scene than I think we are really supposed to understand.
Yeah, that's interesting. I also thought that, like, it was interesting that Worf had to bring this up. Like, Picard comes down to him and is like, hey, time to get that honor back. And then, like, Picard spends a whole bunch of time talking with the one guy who has any authority over that. And then Worf is like, hey, I don't know if this has come up for you yet, but my discommendation was a lie to protect the Empire. And Gowron is like, what? Worf has got to be like, what the fuck did Captain Picard even talk to him about?
He's like asking his boss for a raise when his boss really doesn't know what he does day to day.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you've noticed, but I've closed a bunch of these accounts.
Yeah.
Kicking a lot of ass and I'm staying late. And the boss is like, I don't even know who you are, man.
Yeah. It's a, I don't know, a lot of cross wires so far in this episode, I would say.
Yeah, Worf's got to be real disappointed. Because he gets it up for this conversation and it totally backfires.
They get ready to do the ceremony, and it's going to be the big ceremony where they put a jacket on Gowron, and it's like a combination cloak and Girl Scout vest, because it's got a lot of badges. I'm sure that they're from different achievements. You know,
it looks real heavy.
Fire starting. Helping an old lady cross the street, selling the most cookies.
Yeah.
They're literally like about to drop it on Gowron's shoulders when a record scratches and the music cuts out, and the two Duras sisters and their baby nephew Toral come in, and Toral is a brilliantly cast character, I want to say, because he's like Duras's heretofore unheard of male heir. Like, nobody knew that he had a son. He would have to have a son for the person to be like have a legitimate claim on his seat on the council. And like, this guy is a foot shorter than all other Klingons and has zero charisma. Like he is asking to be the leader of a huge star empire and like has all of the charisma of a paper bag.
I feel like to direct him, they just showed him all the scenes from Karate Kid of the bad guy dojo and all of the kids who train there, because that's how this guy acts the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. The great thing and the terrible thing about Klingon storylines is that we don't ever get like a significantly fleshed out enough look at how the Klingon universe works for any like arbitrary change in the storyline to not just work, you know, like they're exploiting some rule, I guess, where it's like, you know, if anybody seated here can see a reason why Gowron should not marry this vest, speak now or forever hold your peace. And you know, like they speak up and it's like, well, we got to take this seriously. So
the
like,
reason I called him Klingon Jake earlier is because he's getting into a shuttle he doesn't know how to pilot. Like, he walks out into the middle of the hall, of the great hall, and yeah, after every line that he spits, he's sort of like, he looks around and he's like, yeah, right? Right?
Yeah. Like
he has no confidence at all.
No confidence, but somehow like feels entitled to people's support, you know?
Yeah.
And there's one thing about like the whole Duras threat is they are painted as a threat, but it's never really established like what makes them so powerful and what makes them so bad, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like I guess they're like down to align the Empire with the Romulans, so that's bad for the Federation, but it's not inherently bad for the Klingons. And if they showed them doing something that was really distasteful in Klingon terms to like achieve this kind of power, I think that would have been a really good little tweak to this script. I mean, I think it's a pretty good episode. We haven't
to me, they're only a threat because of the Romulans, right? Like,
yeah,
like because we've seen them torture people, we've seen them do all sorts of bad things. All you see the Duras sisters do is show a lot of middle boob.
Yeah, yeah, they,
and that's not evil.
No, that, we should do everything in our power to support that kind of behavior. Did you think that was makeup on boob, or did you think that was like a rubber part of the costume that was made to look like boob?
I have always assumed it was real boob.
Real boob with makeup on it.
And to think that at any point it would not be real is like, that's shattering a part of my imagination.
Yeah, you don't want to live in that universe.
No.
I think you're probably right. I mean, I think it looks real enough that it's probably real, but.
So Gowron sees this fucking kid roll up right as the coat's about to put on his shoulders, and he's like, someone please kill him. Like he just sort of dismisses him with a flip of his hand. But, I mean, Captain Picard is the arbiter. Everyone else in the room being real political wonks, like, they've got to actually go through the motions of hearing this out. They can't just drop the coat on him. Like, mm-hmm. They got to do the blood test. They got to see if things are correct. So they sort of adjourn the meeting to go take care of this.
Right. There's a few little things that happen in here. I think this is probably about in the episode where Guinan crashes Worf's target practice party.
Yeah.
And this is a real weird scene because Guinan comes in and is like, oh, like, you're only on level 14? Well, I can slum it for a while. And they do target practice. And they have this conversation, and it's like, it's a classic Guinan moment in that they're talking about something, you know, and like she like has found Worf at a time when he needs advice and is giving him advice, but it's not about anything that's happening in the episode. It's all about him being a father to Alexander, which is an interesting choice. I think it's not TNG's way to talk about characters that aren't in episodes. You know, like, they definitely don't talk about Kim Peck at all in this, because they would have had to like explain who Kim Peck is and what his role is, and like rehashing that would be inefficient. But Worf's relationship with his son is I think they're basically setting the table for that in this scene, because you know, we know that Alexander becomes kind of a regular player later in the series, but not in this episode at all.
She does that form of counseling where you're
blasting away at dots floating on the wall, showing your superior marksmanship.
Like, sometimes the first step in getting past a way you're feeling is to identify the way that you're feeling.
And then favor.
And she gets Worf to sort of cop to not feeling like other Klingons. And then they start shooting dots again. Like, mm-hmm. It's a fun scene.
It is.
And it's the scene that you sort of want out of Guinan all the time, because it's so, like, it's so true to her brand. You know, she will crash your party. You almost never approach her on her turf. She always finds you when you need her.
Right.
In sort of a magical way.
Yeah, she's like LSD in that way.
I was disappointed she didn't bring the bar gun to target practice.
I know.
We could finally see what level 2 was.
Yeah. It's probably incompatible with that target range, you know?
It would shoot right through the wall.
Punching holes in the ship.
Yeah.
The bar gun. I think this is when Worf kind of makes up his mind to go, like, sort his honor shit out. So he goes and sees Picard and asks for a leave of absence. Picard is very eager to give it to him. And then Worf goes and sees Kern, who is his brother. And he's basically come up with this idea that if he can be a big help to Gowron when Gowron is in a tight spot amidst all of this drama and intrigue, then Gowron will be kind of forced to reopen the Worf's honor case. And
It's a weird assumption that, like, that in Klingon culture, doing the whole enemy of my enemy is my friend situation, like, that would actually work. Like, these are people who stab each other in hallways for perceived slights.
Yeah. Yeah, and, I mean, I think that, I mean, it went, like, I think Kern's support winds up being the linchpin for Gowron being able to make the stand that he makes.
Right.
But yeah, like, it's interesting. It's really interesting how much the idea of honor and politics come into conflict all the time for Gowron and basically everybody on the council. Because, like, to be honorable is to be truthful and forthright and to stand on principle and to, like, you know, stand up for your allies and all that stuff. And, like, all the fucking people in the council do is work to serve themselves and to like advance their own interests ahead of others and work for power. It's a weird thing that this would be the group of people that are in charge of the Klingons. And I think that sort of becomes a theme for Worf across both of these episodes is like Worf has worked his whole life to like make himself as Klingon as fuck. But it's this kind of like, it's this kind of idealized version of what a Klingon is. And that's sort of what Guinan's calling him on too. Like she's saying like Klingons laugh all the time and you never laugh. And so like Worf kind of is shown to be alien in both the Klingon milieu and the human milieu. Like he's outside both cultures.
Yeah.
Jokes.
Yeah, I mean, even in Klingon culture, you rarely get the political leader that you feel like you deserve.
Yeah, yeah.
And the person who rises to the top of that pile is often the one who's willing to do the fucked up shit to get there.
Absolutely.
Do you feel like when you vote for Gowron, you're basically voting for big eyes? Like straight big eyes vote?
Yeah.
All the way down ballot?
Yeah. His campaign slogan is like squinting into the commercial break. squint into the future with Gowron.
My love is a peeper, long in jail for that, which longer nurses the disease.
So we sort of see also behind the curtain of what's going on with the Duras sisters, right? So the Duras sisters and Klingon Jake are palling around. And backstage at the High Council chambers, we've got a couple bread boxes back there too, palling around with the Romulans.
Casa de Duras is rotten with Romulans, and I think that this was meant to be like she's meant to be in full silhouette, and I think that the like higher dynamic range of HD kind of fucked this up.
Yeah, I remember this too.
But you can definitely see that that one of the Romulans who is also in the Manchurian Geordi candidate episode is none other than Rom Jarlin.
Oof.
Rom Jarlin.
No, I heard you.
It works on the page great.
Okay. On the page, it's bold and underlined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks awesome.
Sent with fireworks.
Yeah. So sent with heartbeat.
They've really done their best to breadbox China Phillips here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. This as sexy as a breadbox can possibly be.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Duras sisters are unambiguously in league with the Romulans. Like this is something that's always been, you know, a thing that's been implied. And like, we know that Duras's father was the one that betrayed the Klingons, the Romulans in the Khitomer attack. But this is the first time we've seen like, yep, Romulans are trying to start a Klingon civil war so that they can change the balance of power in the quadrant.
And the reason, I mean, one of the reasons this is so fucked up is that, like, in a Klingon civil war between House Duras and House Gowron, like, you would imagine it would be fairly even on both sides, but if the Romulans are running arms behind enemy lines to House Duras, like, the Gowron people don't stand a chance.
Right. Yeah. So what it's shaping up to be is a real, like, Romulan-Soviet Union Federation as NATO and Klingon Empire as Vietnam type situation. And we got to make sure we're back on the right horse. So Worf is basically totally preoccupied because he's on his leave of absence, not with preserving stability in the Empire or anything, but with getting his honor squared away. So he's using the Enterprise computer banks to find some of the evidence that they used to prove that, and Picard catches him and is like, "That's actually not cool, Worf. Like that's like secret Federation information, and you're using it to change the political situation on your homeworld. Like that's kind of the opposite of the Prime Directive." And I thought this was. This was an interesting conflict as well because we know that Picard believes that the first duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth, right?
Are you talking about scientific truth?
Yeah, or historical truth or moral truth.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, you take your pick of truth. Starfleet officers are supposed to be into it. And, and Picard,
they're poly-truthists.
Mm-hmm. And Picard wants Worf to focus on the non-interference part of his Starfleet obligations. So,
who does Picard think he's talking to? I mean, Worf stuck a batleth through Duras's chest like 6 episodes ago. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's no more meddling than. Like, nothing meddles more than a bat left through the chest.
Yeah, and it's also weird because Picard started this episode by going like, Worf, this is your big chance. Get your honor back, dude.
Which is in itself sort of an encouragement to meddle, right?
Yeah.
I can see how Worf is confused.
Yeah.
I'm sure the computers on the Klingon homeworld suck. They're like green screen pet computers. You remember those from like elementary school, your first computer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've got like Zork on them.
Like the sound of the monitors on that bridge, like that high frequency screaming. Oh, it's going to be terrible.
Yeah. You don't notice it until you turn the computer off and then you're like, oh boy, Jesus, what the fuck? Oh my God, I was straining and I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
If you go sharpen a pencil, it makes all the monitors shake because it dirties up the power on that power line.
Yeah, lots of dirty power over there on the PAC.
Yeah, a lot of pencil sharpening going on too, I'm sure.
I am acute as a ball. You will assist us. I am acute as a ball.
So Picard decides to kind of cut the baby in half and make the information about the Khitomer incident public to everybody. And Worf is like, awesome. But that sort of closes that story, right? Like they never come back to that being a thing. And I would think that would be like big news. Like that's like the WikiLeaks of Star Trek, right? Like shouldn't the Klingon Empire be shaken to its core by revelations that Klingon John Podesta makes a really sweet risotto recipe or whatever?
Well, I mean, just like in contemporary times, like you choose what is important based on your values, right? And what you would like to see happen. And certain factions of the Klingon politic believe that to be insignificant, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, they would much rather have a honorless child take power than somebody who has bad email security like House Gowron.
It seems more and more clear that a civil war is going to pop off any moment, and Picard at this point is like, yeah, so Worf, I should probably recall you back to the Enterprise because we got to back out of this thing and go back to Federation space. We're not really in a position to insert ourselves into this. So why don't you come on back now and we'll back away.
Grab the bottom of the helicopter as we lift it up off this embassy.
Yeah.
And
that's very much the climate.
Yeah. And it's funny because Gowron has just been there like asking for Picard to like take his side in the impending war. And so like Gowron and Worf are both like walking out of the room and Worf is in this tight spot. And Gowron looks at him like, you're not gonna leave me hanging like this, are you, dog? And Worf is like, all right, well, that's it.
Then I resign my commission as a Starfleet officer.
And he takes off his badge and tosses it on the desk. And that is like the big climactic moment in the episode.
This scene features another moment of Riker watching tennis. Like, this has happened a few times this season even, where Riker's just in the middle of a sometimes two-shot, sometimes three-shot, where he's like, he looks at Picard, then he looks at Worf, and then he looks at Picard, and then he's like... He doesn't betray any sort of feeling while he does it either, which is an interesting amount of restraint on his part.
Yeah.
But this massive thing happens in front of him, and he is the coolest guy in the room.
And he's also like Worf's best bud, you know? Like it's surprising that he doesn't speak up more here or like ever have a scene where he is talking things over with Worf. You know, what's Worf going through? And that further highlights something that I think is very strange about this episode, which is like basically nobody but Picard and Worf have anything to do in it.
Right.
Like it's all Klingon shit, and like I think Data has like a line or two, Riker has a line or two. You don't see anything from Geordi, Troy, the Doctor, none of the rest of the cast has any involvement really.
I don't think that serves the story very well at all. I mean, the gravity of this moment could be so much larger if it looks like it hurts Riker. Like if the idea looks like it's going to be a massive emotional trapdoor for a bunch of people. But not even Picard is in a position to emote anything at this point. He just sort of takes it like a boss who's had an employee quit.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Riker's so upset by it that that's all he can do. But yeah, like, I mean, I also think that like, the point of, In this era of television history, the point of a big cliffhanger final episode is make them want to come back next season. And it's like a different show, you know?
This show has never been about make them want to watch another episode, even.
Well, anyways, the war starts up, and it's looking like Gowron is about to go down in the first battle. They manage to take out one of the two Duras ships that are coming to attack his cruiser, but the other one is just about to put him out of their misery when Kern and his crew show up and scare him away. So Duras, the Duras sisters have their army, and Gowron and Worf and Kern have their army, and they have the fight that everybody's been spoiling for. Gowron was talking a lot of shit about not having much interest in giving Worf his honor back. And, like, the second Worf saves Gowron's bacon once, Gowron's like, here, shake hands with this knife. You got it. You got your honor. It's yours, buddy. Like, Gowron is cheap at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's true. Shaking hands with a knife, man.
Yeah.
That does not... I mean, anyone who's ever sliced their hand will tell you. It's going to take a long time to heal.
Yeah, the skin's always moving. It doesn't heal quickly.
And really bad hand injury continuity also. Because for the rest of this episode and the back end of the cliffhanger, like, his hand's working just fine.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not wrapped up at all.
Yeah. Well, do you want to talk about this big, surprising final scene?
So at the very end of the episode, House Duras is feeling pretty great about their chances. They're talking backstage about what's going to happen next.
We know that
they're sort of...
Their military power is pretty far ahead of what Gowron is able to muster at the moment.
Yeah, and with the convoys coming in, like they're sort of toasting the idea that the Enterprise has left the scene and that they're going to be left to clean up this mess that they've created and install the leadership that they've always wanted.
Yep.
And out from the shadows comes Romulan Tasha Yar, who is like, look, these humans, you may underestimate them because you think this Picard guy is going to leave, but I'm here to tell you one thing. Humans pop up when you least expect them.
Yeah.
And then we get the dun-dun-duns.
It's like the way Tolkien would describe a hobbit.
Well, yeah, I mean, not the least of reasons is because Tasha Yar's looking very elvish.
She sure is, yeah. But she's got the Romulan haircut, but she's the one Romulan that's blonde.
Right. I rewatched this scene over and over again when I was a kid, and they don't show you the ears.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that was a real head scratcher going into that summer. Like, is she or isn't she?
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if they wanted to leave their options open.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sort of right through the summer.
She's not as she has nowhere near as much loaf as the other Romulans. I don't think she has any forehead loaf at all, right?
Well, she covers it up with bangs, which
is a
great way to cover up anything you got on your forehead that is not looking cosmetically tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I've tended to grow my hair a little longer when my acne flares up, so.
Yeah, yeah. I think most of our viewers know what that's like, Ben.
Mm-hmm. Well, that just about wraps it up for Redemption Part 1. Did you like this episode, Adam?
I'm going to reserve whether or not I like it, because I think it all depends on Part 2 with how strong Part 1 is. It's just a tee-up for what's to come. There's not a lot of there in this story.
Yeah.
Like, things happen, but...
A lot of table gets set.
Yeah, even in Best of Both Worlds Part 1, a lot happens.
Yeah.
And far less happens in this first of two-parters. So.
Yeah. I was noting when I was, like, setting up our little show notes here that, like, the plot descriptions of... Part 1 and 2 that I copy-pasted from Wikipedia are like Part 1 and 2 has as much plot description as an average single episode of the show.
Yeah, because it's very scene-y instead of plot-y, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's an episode that sets a lot of table, but also just like completely baffles me in a lot of ways. Like they're always beaming up and beaming down to the planet while like war is brewing overhead, and it's like how like free are people to just travel around this highly contended planet? And is it cool for Picard to just kind of like by himself go visit the Duras sisters? Like, shouldn't he take like a Dustbuster club with him if he's gonna go do that? There's so many things that I'm just like, the fuck is going on?
They really dangle a lot out there, don't they? They dangle the flagship out there near the Klingon homeworld. They dangle Picard and Worf on the planet's surface all the time. Like, they're really willing to stick their dicks into a pencil sharpener, like, multiple times this episode.
Make those screens shake.
Yeah. In a way that typically you'd get Riker going... like playing a little defense with the strategy here, and he's so absent that you don't even get a scene like that.
Yeah.
You're a cast member and you see the script to the season finale of season four, the most important season that you've had, and you see every cast member gets a single line of dialogue except for Patrick Stewart and Michael Dorn, like, are you a little disappointed? Are you a little insulted? What's up with that?
I don't think the Doctor or Troy or Geordi said anything.
I mean, there's a scene where they walk Worf off of the ship past sort of a parade, everyone's at parade rest down this corridor to the transporter room, and the parade ends in the transporter room with the senior staff, and you see Beverly and Troy in there. I don't think you see, and Geordi, but you never see them in the rest of the episode, and I don't think they have any lines.
I watched that scene over again because I was like, did we even see Gates McFadden's face? Is it possible that they just put somebody else in that wig?
Yeah,
I don't know. See her face, but it's like it might as well have just been shot from the back and a stand-in wearing that beautiful, beautiful wig.
Yeah,
it's very strange. I like the episode though. Like it's fun to. It's fun to take a break from Federation politics and splash around in Klingon politics for a while.
Yeah, I agree with you there, for sure.
I do think that it has set up the table for an interesting next episode.
Someone has set us up the table?
Yeah. All your Kronos are belong to us.
I mean, getting back to that whole summer break thing... You can't help but be a little bit crestfallen that this is the cliffhanger, right? It's a very shallow cliff. Mm-hmm. This is a survivable cliff to fall off of.
Right. Like, it would suck for Worf to be off the show, which is sort of implied is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But we'll live. It's not Picard becoming the enemy.
No, Riker is not, like, fondling a pistol and whether or not to fire it.
Yeah.
Do you want to do an ad, Ben?
Let's make some money.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of priority one messages here. First one is from Richard Dodson, and it's to Ben Connor. Sound familiar?
I love those guys. Our old buddy Richard Dodson.
Yeah.
Dick Dodson.
Here's how it reads. Thanks, Ben. It was awesome seeing a pod response. How do you think they'll read this? Kevin Picosby edition of This Old Entrepreneur? By the way, Transparent Aluminum is a great ad to the inside joke about soundproof drywall. Adam and Benjamin would probably dig the joke too, but the 350 character limit is preventing me from properly explaining it.
What's great about this message is that Richard Dodson understands how important it is to explain a joke. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just not going to tell the joke. He knows it's crucial to explain it.
Dissect
for
the frog.
Proper comedic effect.
Yeah, it's the greatest gen way.
I feel like that's what we should have done to our tour t-shirts, is like, few people actually got what we were doing with that, and that maybe at the bottom of that we just should have done, these are the names of the engineers.
Would have been on brand.
Yeah.
Thanks, Richard, for continuing to send these. We have another message here.
I have a feeling that Richard is having some email problems.
Yeah.
This might be Richard's only way to send messages to people.
It's the most expensive way of carrying on a two-way conversation and the least private.
Happy to help. Our second priority one message is from Tim, and it is for Tom. Parenthetically, my favorite gay nerd. Did you know gay nerds love Star Trek? I think I do now.
I had my suspicions.
Message goes like this. Tom, thank you for turning me on to this great podcast, which has been a wonderful diversion while I've been recovering from having my own artificial heart surgery. Whoa. Even though I wasn't quite stabbed by a Nausicaan. To Ben and Adam, how about Voyager next? Hair jokes alone seem worth it.
Ooh,
Oh, yeah. Tim.
There's some...
I see your point.
There's some definitely goofable hair. I think that Voyager, perhaps more than Deep Space Nine, has the examples of 90s hair that the 90s hair cast would really be able to sink its teeth into.
It's true.
But then again, that also would be like signing ourselves up for 3.5 more years of this.
I keep going back and forth about that level of commitment, Ben.
Well, people will find out one way or the other. Thank you, Tim, for sending that message. If you'd like to send a message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. People love sending messages, so why don't you do it?
I imagine Tim is like recovering in a hospital room from his heart surgery, and his doctor walks in, overhears him listening to this stupid fucking podcast. He's like... It's like, Tim, you wanted to live for this? I gave you this artificial heart for this? What a waste.
Yeah. He's not wrong.
Yeah. Glad you're still around, Tim.
Yeah. That's kind of the kind of bedside manner that a Dr. Pulaski would have, right?
Yeah.
Like if Pulaski caught Picard listening to The Greatest Generation. She would sort of never, like a, never have let him live that down.
You know, like a guy who goes into a place where smoking isn't allowed, so he dangles his arm outside the door to keep the cigarette lit. Like
yeah.
that's Dr. Pulaski with a drink, like like doing an examination, but the highball glass is outside the door. You hear the clinking ice.
Yeah, Geordi walks by outside and makes eye contact with him. He's like, "All right." Darmok, Angelad,
and Tanagra. Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can. And it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one, an Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply. When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment. Recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bunch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I did, Adam. Drunk Shimoda, of course, is our award that we give the character that is most memorable for whatever ridiculous arbitrary reason we select in an episode. My drunk Shimoda was Toral, the Klingon Jake, for almost missing his window to stop Gowron from becoming chancellor. He shows up late to the installation ceremony. Like, the cloak is inches from Gowron's shoulder when he, like, runs in. And I just would love to see the, like, montage of him getting out of bed and, like, realizing that he hit the snooze button one too many times.
It's like a total Back to the Future open.
Yeah.
Like, Toral is, like, sleeping all folded up,
yeah,
in his maroon vest,
mm-hmm,
his, yeah, maroon life preserver.
I would love to see the, like, scene where he's, like, racing through the hallways, Ferris Bueller, like, you know, running through backyards, walks back to say hi to the Duras sisters as they're sunbathing in their bikinis, and then keeps running. I would love to see him come around a hallway corner and, like, almost skid out. And then keep running. There's so much I wanted to see there. I feel like if they'd cut the scene with Guinan talking to Worf about Alexander, they would have had time for that.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I want to cut a Guinan scene, but, like, didn't
drive
the story.
Don't you dare cut a Guinan scene.
Did you have a drunk Shimoda, Adam?
I did, and I do. I'm giving my Shimoda to every scene that Picard chooses to speak Klingon. And the reason is, it's like going to a Mexican restaurant with your parents and your mom orders the chimichanga. Like, every time Picard says kapla to Worf or any other Klingon, mm-hmm, they don't respond in Klingon. And
right.
I think that's very telling. It's because they are embarrassed for Picard having made the attempt to speak Klingon. Like,
yeah.
And Picard doesn't get the hint. He keeps speaking Klingon to people, and they keep speaking English back at him. They're trying to get him off the hook for the language barrier, and Picard just keeps soldiering through.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they're embarrassed for him. And I think Picard should stop doing it.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those things where you don't know if it's going to be culturally, you know, if it's like a compliment that you are trying to communicate with them in their language, or a little condescending that,
yeah,
you want to use your worse version of their language than their as good as yours version of your language.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's... You
That's
know.
The feeling. It's the wincing condescension that I feel every time I see a scene like that.
Well, the one character that doesn't wince is Worf. Worf gives him, like, full Worf eyes when he says kapla to him. So I think that just brightens up the line around how weird Worf is as a Klingon.
Are we sure Worf eyes counts as approval?
I think
he has Worf eyes for all sorts of reasons.
I think in this case, it's definitely approval, Adam.
Fair enough. Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode? Is it part two to this cliffhanger? That would be my guess.
The next episode is season 5, episode 1, Redemption, part 2. And this is the first episode where the veto power is back in the on configuration. For both of us, and here is the
vetoes are armed.
Vetoes are armed and dangerous. Picard risks all-out war with the Romulans when he involves Starfleet in a Klingon civil war. You remember this episode, Adam?
Again, like as much as I remember any other Klingon storyline episode, this is the episode where we get a lot more of Romulan Tasha, though.
Yeah.
Like this is the payoff to the big reveal, the literal reveal.
Yeah. Last episode we were talking about Redemption Part 1, and I was like pretty sure that was the episode where Data gets to be captain for a little while.
Yeah.
And like after this, I'm not positive that's this one. Maybe it's like another, you know, like is it all just going to be more Klingon shit, or are they going to get the other characters involved now?
I feel like you go into summer break as an actor having not done anything on part one. I think you've got to assume that you've got nothing to do in part two also.
Yeah, get a little...
You just show up fat and out of shape and like with the wrong haircut.
Yeah, Data's got like a mustache when he comes back.
Like showing up for training camp out of shape. Mm-hmm. That's what they do.
Fun.
Sort of protest fat.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my strike beard. Well, would you veto this one, Adam?
As a matter of principle, I think I would like to watch both sides of a two-parter.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. So we shall watch it.
Oh, what a relief!
I'm looking forward to it, Adam. You know what relieves me every time I look at it is.
I don't want to know what relieves you, Ben.
I'm not talking about relieving myself. I'm talking about other people relieving me.
That's even worse. How many people relieve you, Ben?
Well, they, like hundreds, literally, relieve me every month by going to MaximumFun.org/donate and choosing to become sustaining members of MaximumFun.org and selecting The Greatest Generation as one of the shows that they are pledging to support. It's money that really comes in handy when it comes to the justifying all of this time wasting to our wives conversations, and we really appreciate the fact that people find enough value in this to put a couple of ducats toward it.
We've also inherited quite a community as a result of this show. People talk about the show and tell even better jokes than ours. On Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. We're also on Facebook in a couple of places. And Reddit at r/GreatestGen.
Yeah. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and the great Adam Ragusea for our Priority One music and several other songs they hear from time to time on the show. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an all-out episode of The Greatest Generation.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.